Enter snarky comment here for the intro.
What do you got?
I have no actual snarky comment. That's why I said that thing.
Do you want to talk about Michael Jordan?
I always want to talk about Michael Jordan. Okay, so here's my thing. I want to start a sports podcast because I have so many issues with basketball, but nobody wants to talk about them.
Okay.
We're not going to talk about them now.
I was giving you the floor.
I need my own podcast.
Nice.
All right, people. We are rolling on episode number 18. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I am the program manager and one of the co-hosts for Podcast for Good, and this is...
Heather Lucas. I'm the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
Yes, and our stalwart co-host as well.
Dun, dun, dun.
So today what we're going to talk about actually is a really interesting subject. We had a couple of folks on that were really great to talk about poverty during childhood. So one of the organizations we brought on has become a regular to the show.
Yeah.
Family Education and Support Services, Executive Director Shelley Willis and Kinship Program Director Lynn Irvina joined us to talk a little bit about poverty and how they see it affected here in Thurston County, but then also what they do to help.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one, which at first I did not think had much of a connection
sure.
to poverty, but after we got into it, it was definitely
yeah.
apparent, is the interim executive director and board president of the SIDS Foundation of Washington, Aileen Carroll. So we talked with both of them. Aileen's, of course, is a really interesting conversation because we skew more into the issue of SIDS.
Mm-hmm.
But as it relates to poverty,
yeah.
which is really interesting. And so this is a pretty interesting issue that I don't think a lot of people think about. I know that I kind of mentioned it in our conversation with Family Education and Support Services, but one of the things that we have noticed over the last 10 years, of course, is that everyone keeps telling us the economy's getting better, it's getting better, it's getting
yeah.
better, things are better. Look at the Dow Jones industrial average, look at all these people buying houses, people are going back to work, all these jobs are being added. And that is true. I mean, incrementally, the numbers suggest
yeah.
that the economy's gotten better. But then what I think most of us have noticed in our interactions with nonprofits is that there are these new people that are being added to the folks who are getting left behind.
Yeah.
So it's not just the standard folks that are getting left behind. It's all of a sudden these people who were on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And those folks on the edge have now essentially just been pushed over.
Yeah, and I think for that too, the divide seems to get wider.
It's getting wider and
yeah.
wider. I mean, and those are undisputable facts.
Yeah.
Right? The talking points get used in one direction or the other, but the undisputable
sure.
fact is that people who were on the brink before 2008, now it's like a no-doubter.
Yeah,
they are now the folks who need help just as much as the people who needed help beforehand.
Yeah.
And it's almost, I don't know if you noticed, but every time we ask the question, do you notice it getting better? Do you see the need changing? Is it getting more? There are a ton of charities who say, tragically, that the need is getting
yeah.
more.
I do find too, like when somebody answers yes and no to that question,
mm-hmm.
it's yes that, you know, services are becoming more available or they're getting better,
right.
but no, things aren't changing right. the broad spectrum of
right.
how everything
yeah.
works.
Yeah. I feel like it's a necessary question to ask. It depresses me almost every time we ask the question.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. It is a necessary question.
It is, because I think then it kind of shows you that your gifts, the donations you make to these organizations, it still matters. It's still
yeah,
hugely
very
important.
Very impactful.
And it makes more of a difference today than it has ever done in the past.
Yeah.
Right? Because one of the things that we talked about with Family Education and Support Services is how a public school has become sort of the epicenter for taking care of a kid's social issues.
Yeah, I remember going to school and just being like, school's where I go and
yeah.
I'm in my classroom.
Right.
Like, they give me lunch at one point, I get mm-hmm. to go outside at another. End of
yeah.
story. Then
That's
I go
it.
Home.
Right.
And that's how it worked for the majority of kids who were there.
Right. I know.
But it's not that way anymore.
No, it's not. I mean, yeah. I mean, like, I don't remember having a ton of kids who were on reduced or free lunch.
No, I don't either, yeah.
And then now, I mean, you'll hear it later, Lynn Irvina basically says that there are schools that have just given up and said everybody just gets free lunch.
Well, I do remember when I was younger that in elementary school, there weren't a ton of kids who had, like, the free breakfast or free or reduced lunch.
Yeah.
But then as I got into middle school and high school, that number increased. Yeah, yeah, there were definitely more when I was in high school.
Definitely.
Surprisingly, but yeah.
So this is, of course, number two of the Reformulated podcast. So we're going to hit you with relevant stats in between our interviews. But before we dive into our interviews, we, of course, have the question of the podcast. So, Ms. Lucas, hit us with the question of the podcast.
So when I was a kid, I had a couple different things that I decided I was going to be.
Okay.
I was going to be a teacher, then I was going to be a lawyer, then I was going to be a doctor, then I was going to be a teacher, then I was going to be a doctor, then I was going to be a lawyer, and then I decided I didn't want to do anything.
Yes.
So I was going to be a bum. Okay. I was going to not do anything at all.
Yeah.
And then at some point, career kind of, career kind of stuff started to happen where I was like, you know, you're in high school, you have to figure out what you're going to do with your life and what you're going to go to college for and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So then I thought, I'm going to go and I'm going to do something that makes money. Because clearly, money is important.
What age was this when you were like, realistically, I should make some money at my
15,
job?
I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was like, I'm going to do something with computers because computer people make money.
Yeah. There you go.
So when you were a kid, did you base what you wanted to be on that grown-up idea of I need to be able to make something, do something that makes money?
No. When I first was growing up, no. Because when I was growing up, I wanted to be a velociraptor. So clearly, they're not making money.
Oh, that's incredible.
So they're not making money.
No, they're not.
I mean, they learned to open doors in 1996.
Yeah, that's a real important skill if you want to go anywhere in the world.
You
want to
be a velociraptor, you got to know how to open a door.
Because, let's face it, your food can open doors.
Yes.
For the most part, so you got to be able to chase it.
Yeah. No. So, So I think.
Oh, yeah. You should put that on business cards. Philip Kerrigan formerly wanted to be a velociraptor.
Wanted to be a velociraptor. That business ended at like like 7 or 8.
Oh, okay.
Right? I stopped wanting to be a velociraptor.
I thought you would say 15 or 16.
Right. Like, well, I realized my dream of being a velociraptor was not possible at 19 years old.
This is kind
of
like that movie Step Brothers. You know, the dad wanted to be, what, a dinosaur?
A T-Rex or whatever. Right? Yeah. Yeah. I totally empathize with his position.
I love it.
But I do notice the way, like every kid did, how like, your dream job starts off totally unrealistic, hence the raptor.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it gets progressively more realistic as you get older. Like, I really should do this instead.
Instead of being a raptor, an extinct dinosaur.
I think probably I was the same as you. Like, probably the same as you. It was probably like 15 or 16 where I was like, oh, man, so I have to live.
Yeah.
And do something that, you know,
will support you.
Will support me. So it more from your standard sort of stuff, your police officer, your rock star.
Oh, okay.
You know, you're like the ones that as you're a kid you think of.
Yeah.
To then, well, I should really get into something that like pays money that I'm good at.
Yeah.
And I think that's when it ended up. Like 16 or 17, I was like, yeah, you know what? Then of course for me I was always like, well, I want to do something that makes a difference. It's good.
Uh-huh.
And so then, you know, now we've landed here. But I can't imagine when I was younger, I was like, I'd like to be the program manager of the state workplace giving program.
Nice. Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's very specific as a kid, too.
Yes, right? Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty niche thing, right?
Just a little bit.
I just imagine a kid being like, I want to be an accountant. Nobody wants
chartered
to
accountant. That's what I've always wanted.
Yes. So that's a beautiful, beautiful segue.
Yeah.
into our first interview with the Northwest Infant Survival SIDS Foundation of Washington Executive Director and Board President. That is a mouthful. Aileen Carroll. So here is that interview with Aileen. So we are here with Executive Director.
Well, you're Interim Director.
I'm Interim Executive Director.
Interim Executive Director.
But I'm the Board President.
And the Board President of the Northwest Infant Survival SIDS Foundation of Washington.
Right.
Correct? Aileen Carroll. Yes. Excellent. Aileen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Awesome.
We're delighted. It was nice. We were talking about how many people are beneficiaries of the combined fund drive. I looked at the list and I was blown away and humbled by the fact that people continue to choose us, which is amazing. So we're grateful to be here. That's and awesome. Thankful for everything we get.
Well, thank you. So where are you based out of?
Our office is based in Seattle, mm-hmm. in the Wallingford neighborhood. We have an office in an old historic building. Historic nice. Seattle runs it. So
oh, cool.
they like to have nonprofits, like PEPS groups, the Wallingford Senior Center. So we're have a very small space, our own little tiny office in there. And we have been in that office probably about over 15 years now. But our organization is a statewide. We serve families statewide.
Okay.
And we have been in... We used to be the SIDS Foundation of Washington, mm-hmm. but we've been around since 1961.
Right.
So, but we're based in Seattle.
And awesome. Then, funny, the awesome. Two organizations you share your building with, I believe, are also in our program.
And it's a great building, and they give. I have to say, they're really good to us. I get really good rent, which is great for nonprofits.
Oh,
I don't want to have overhead. You know?
Yes,
so I'm like,
exactly.
Maybe I should run this out of my basement sometimes. Right. I'm like, is that really what I should be doing? But trying to get something that's not going to cost us an arm and leg, and we can put more towards program.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So what does your organization do for the community?
So our primary goals are twofold. So since 1961, which is how we started, our goal is to help families who've suffered the tragic loss, the deaths of their babies, mm-hmm. due to sudden infant death syndrome. Mm-hmm. We've expanded that as we've learned more about other sudden unexpected infant deaths. The technical acronym is SUID deaths. Mm. So SUID deaths are also unexpected deaths that may be categorized as undetermined, mm-hmm. or they may come unexpectedly because babies are dying in their sleep due to suffocation mm-hmm. or asphyxiation. So we're looking at how do we care for families in Washington State whose babies have died? How do we reach out to them? A lot of them don't necessarily reach out to us, so mm-hmm. how do we get out to them? How are we connected with community service groups, social workers, public health nurses? So that we can connect with families and get them immediate grief support, to be able to provide them long-term grief support mm-hmm. and something hopeful, so they have a place to connect, to get good quality statistical information, mm-hmm. fact-based medical information, to get connected to various research projects that are happening to try to find out what is SIDS, what it is, what it isn't.
Right.
So we're really trying to connect with families to give them emotional and physical and medical support, if you will. So we do that. That's a primary concern for us.
Yeah.
And then secondarily, we'd rather not have those conversations and people join our club. So where we know we can introduce risk reduction factors and mm-hmm. reduce the infant mortality rate, we like to be in the community at health fairs or collaborating with WIC offices mm-hmm. or maternal support services or hospitals, pediatricians, daycare facilities.
Right.
Anyone who's watching kids, particularly infants under 1 year of age, getting them quality information, evidence-based information for best sleep practices.
Awesome.
Very nice.
Yeah, SIDS is this, because I have three kids.
Yeah.
SIDS was this boogeyman. Like, because I remember, like, it wasn't something you heard a lot about, and then all of a sudden it existed in, like, this sort of, like, everybody talked about it.
Yeah.
And so I remember, like, wondering, okay, do I not do a blanket? Do I do a blanket? Is it on the back? Is it on the side? I don't understand. Which one do I do?
Yeah.
No pacifier? Pacifier? It is this.
Right.
Like, it looms over you like a big, giant boogeyman.
I think any parent, I have had four kids. Actually, I had a daughter die due to sudden infant death syndrome, which is why I'm in this organization giving back, because I felt very supported.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I have the capability. How can I help? And eventually, pull you in.
Right.
And now I'm the board president. I'm like, I didn't expect to do this or be a grief support person. But the amount of information you get when you're discharged from a hospital, like a packet.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it's hard to figure out what's the most important things to do, what are the most biggest concerns, when. Mm-hmm. I think there's really interesting things that the state has done where they've given out, they're called child profile mailings, mm-hmm. and they send you at milestone periods information mm-hmm. to your home or wherever you're living at the time, and I suppose it's hard to keep track of people when they move, but things about, hey, when your baby's first born, here's things you should know, and here's the immunizations you should do, and here's how to engage with them. One of the hardest things, though, is when someone is in the hospital, they're overwhelmed, they're trying to learn everything with a new baby, trying to help them, what happens when they go home, mm-hmm. to monitor how their baby is sleeping, when really what their baby wants to do is be held for the most part,
right.
And be fed. That starts to get confusing, and they're tired, and you're exhausted when you have a new baby, particularly if you're a mom and you're nursing. So that kind of thing is the reality, and it does seem like, well, it doesn't really happen. I mean, considering, let's say, take 2015 as an example. There were 89,000 live births in the state of Washington, and there were 472, I'm probably wrong in the exact number, but infant deaths in that same year.
Wow.
Not all of those were SIDS deaths per se, 67 of them were. So you're going to say, oh, well, that's not very many out of that. But that's actually, for babies 1 month to 1 year, the largest reason babies are dying.
Is SIDS.
Is SIDS and unsafe sleep.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's between 1 month and 1 year. And that first monthly period, they're usually figuring out congenital abnormalities, or are babies trying to recover from premature birth and those kinds of disadvantages in the first month. But once you get to that first month marker, those things afterwards, SIDS and unsafe sleep are the number one reason babies are dying.
Wow.
And people don't know that.
No.
Yeah, but in the scheme of 89,000 live births, that's maybe that's not too many, right? It doesn't happen super frequently.
Yes.
Sure, but if it happens to you,
but
it's
it does.
The world.
And one of the things when I looked at, you know, signing up for this podcast, there's a disparity.
Mm-hmm.
The Black and African American and Native American and Indian, Native and Alaskan are at a two times greater risk of their babies dying from SIDS and unsafe sleep.
Yeah.
Some of that is also related to the poverty level,
what
access to information, social inequities, whether it's, you know, chronic diabetes or obesity. Those all are also now they're seeing are contributing to the infant mortality rate being where it is. And Washington State's actually doing quite well.
That's good.
Compared to the rest of the nation. We rank the eighth lowest in infant mortality.
Well, hey, good
job, Washington. Go Washington. State. I live in Pierce County, and Pierce County has one of the highest infant mortality rates in the state. So I'm like, okay, what? How do we help? What are those things that we can do?
Yeah,
because it is happening.
Yeah.
So that brings up this very good third question, which I like your question.
Oh, do you?
Nice job. because it is curious. You just mentioned it off the top, just a second ago. The socioeconomics, even a little bit of race, poverty coming into play for people who suffer from their child dying from SIDS.
Yeah.
There is a correlation, it sounds like, then, between poverty. Is it a matter of education? Is it a matter of these folks just don't end up having the tools at their home that are necessary to make sure?
So the main things that they're looking at are access to good health care, so particularly prenatal health care. So are they getting to the doctor? Are they getting the information? Like we said, you have a baby and there's a myriad of information coming at you, and you're concerned about.
I thought
this
there was
person.
No way I was going to be able to buckle my first child in the car seat.
Right. I mean, that's a simple maneuver. You're like, okay.
Right.
So imagine that you don't have all the information, or let's say you're a single mom, or you don't have a supportive network around you that's going to come to wrap their arms around you and give you some support, and you're off kind of on your own. You go home with, or you're have, you know, you're not. In some cases, you don't have culturally relevant information to help you. It's all, you know, written in the bias, that sort of generic medical bias.
Mm-hmm.
So unless someone's helping interpret it for you,
there's
not a lot of following up, not a lot of phone calls that somebody might make. It depends on the health care that you're getting. So a lot of the people are on Medicaid that are seeing the higher infant mortality rates, up to 60%.
Wow.
So I think it's interesting that I think we somehow all go, yeah, okay, I know. Yeah, oh yeah, and it's sad. But it's how do we then, we look around and get a strategy for getting good prenatal care, getting to those visits, having doctors you can rely on that are going to give you the same consistent information. Because even we run into that. They'll say, well, you know, you're struggling, you know, you're having a hard time, you probably should just sleep with your baby next to you, especially if we want you to breastfeed.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the easiest. Or they don't even have a crib. Like some people do not even have a safe place for their baby to sleep, which is where our organization, in partnership with a national organization, we're delivering portable cribs Awesome. There's safety-approved portable cribs to people who qualify, who are low-income or Medicaid, and we're working with systems that are already meeting people, that are already, whether it's MSS, so those maternal support services, or WIC offices, or other services, community services, that provide aid, whether it's diapers or formula or clothing, and they're working now where we can get somebody brand new, safety-approved crib, teach them safe sleep, so it's not just giving them the crib, but they gotta get the information. So even if it's just pictures, sometimes we're like, oh, our language isn't matching, you can show a picture and give them the basics, the ABCs of safe sleep.
Yeah.
But I think it's we're seeing the information, especially from a recent report actually out of Washington State, that it's health issues, so people who have diabetes, or they have so chronic conditions of diabetes or obesity, or chronic issues getting access to health care. So folks that are just not having the same basic starting point that I know I had to get me going. And I have an education level where I can read information, digest it, assume. I have a husband who's there with me to back me up, to support me when I'm exhausted. You take baby, you help out right now because I got to go get some sleep or and not have to sleep with baby.
You mentioned like access to cribs. I mean, like it's, I think, more prevalent than people realize too. When I have a cousin who is older than me, but my family, my aunt, she didn't have a crib for her, so they actually had to put her in a dresser drawer. And that's where they kept
her. That is not uncommon.
They had some place for her to actually
sleep. People say just use a laundry basket. Right? Because it's a safe place. No one's going to step on it. It's a lot of people will take their baby into bed with them. Many of them might do it because they're nursing, of course, and they fall asleep, but they don't then make the transition to put baby back to sleep in their own sleep environment. So the American Academy of Pediatrics released a report every 5 years on their sort of their top recommendations for safe sleep. So back in October of 2016, they released their next round, and they upped their category of what was a priority, which is room share, but don't bed share. And so what if you don't have a crib? Or what if you don't have a bassinet? Then how can we get that? So we're working throughout the state and linking arms with other organizations to get people a safe place for their baby to sleep. Interestingly, it was 2011, they recalled drop-sided cribs. So cribs used to be able, you could drop, push on a bar or a lever, and then one side would pop down so you could easily, more easily get your baby in and out. They recalled all of those because they were actually having strangulation and other deaths.
Holy cow.
I'm like, you think a crib? So you can buy, so those are all recalled. So they couldn't be passed on. They couldn't go to a consignment shop. They couldn't say, hey, I have one. Do you want it? So now we were left with this gap, and we saw a huge surge in a need for people looking for a place for their baby to sleep. So there's an effort afoot to do baby boxes. So anybody listening might have heard about these baby boxes. They were sort of designed in Finland. And Finland has a very low infant mortality rate. But Finland doesn't correlate the baby box, sleep, literally like
a box,
a banker's file box, a square file box with a lid. They don't correlate their distribution of those as lowering the infant mortality rate. They correlate it with safe sleep information, with everybody getting access to good prenatal care. They're a small country, right? Everybody gets the same information. So when you're going to have a baby, you know you can go to the doctor. In fact, you're certain, this is the expectation. You go, you meet with your doctors, you get good health care on a consistent basis. We're going to set it up so your baby has information. And so they've been teaching this practice of safe sleep for a long time. So it's not the box.
It's the good information.
Just like I could give you a crib, but that's not necessarily the crib. It's, are you using everything appropriately and understand why? So it's a twofold. So you do need access to the tool, but you need to know how to use the tool.
Education.
So more and more, that's where we're trying to figure out, how do we fill that gap? How do we get people on level playing field all the time?
So as far as insurance goes for Washington State, I mean, I know that in the United States, it's a big topic, healthcare. So when a family experiences a SIDS death, are there insurance services available to that family?
I don't know the answer to your question. That's interesting. I know there's services to help people with burial costs, which can be very expensive. There's an organization that we will refer to that's actually based in Puyallup, called the Tears Foundation. They may be on your list, actually.
They actually are.
And they started, and their goal was to help families who've, whether it was an infant loss or otherwise, they couldn't afford burial costs. It's expensive. It's shockingly expensive to bury a person or even to cremate somebody. So they were helping families offset the cost. They can't cover the entire expense, but they can aid and help each family that needs it. Mm-hmm. We don't have that service, but there isn't really an insurance benefit to help you cover that unless you pay into
a
life insurance policy to help cover that, which you really don't necessarily think you would do that. You expect
child,
the one thing I can say, and I can say it personally, is you expect to outlive your children.
Yes.
You expect them to, for better or worse, let's say you get to be old and they have to bury you because you're old, you've served your life, thank God. And then, but to have that reverse, you don't expect to bury your own children.
Right.
You plan for that, really.
Right. Yeah. Suddenly that, especially that early.
Yeah.
I mean, that first year is filled, it's all about hope and optimism and positivity and you're
milestones,
so excited.
Reaching the next milestone,
right.
A giggle, a coo, a sitting up, a crawl, eating solid
foods. And for it
foods.
To be abruptly ended during that time period, which is supposed to be, it's all these emotions going on. So I can only imagine how that's
So, and we see most SIDS deaths, they occur between about 2 and 4 months, which correlates to a developmental period in babies.
Yeah.
So there's good research that's happening. There's actually a researcher at Seattle Children's Hospital in Seattle who's a couple years into it. His name's Daniel Rubens. He's working on a theory about inner ear damage a potential that causes the arousal of a baby who might be suffering from a lack of oxygen, fresh air exchange.
Yeah.
They may not rouse out of that deep sleep.
Oh, yeah.
So he's examining that. There's other great research also done here in the United States. So, in fact, the term SIDS was coined in Washington State. They had the first international SIDS conference was held back in 1960 or 61, like when we started.
Yeah.
And boom, they coined the term and came up with the clinical definition for it and said, okay, we got to wrap our arms around it so we can pinpoint it, understand it, and get to the root of it and understand what are causing these babies to suddenly die with these normally looking, they look like healthy babies, and they suddenly die in this early period of life. Yeah.
That's kind of interesting, though. Washington State, like, as we've done these podcasts,
we
kind of find that Washington State does really
good. We do
good.
Awesome
a
things.
A lot of things.
We yeah.
It's very nice and encouraging,
I
for
know.
Sure.
Mission territory, almost,
if
you will, out here.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Take care of business.
Yeah.
So let's say someone hears this podcast and thinks they like what you guys do and they want to start giving to your organization. What do those donations do for you guys?
Great. Main thing is we can send a family a grief packet for about $10. We can put together a book. We can have them on our mailing list so that they get regular information. We handwrite thank you cards, or not thank you cards, but bereavement cards on the anniversary of their baby's death.
Wow.
And we also send them on their baby's birthday.
Oh,
because
wow.
so many people don't necessarily remember that.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I don't know what to say. I don't want to make someone upset. But recognizing that this person really did exist, even though for a short while, is really important. So we try to, that ongoing connection. And more what we're trying to do, we used to have in-person support groups throughout the state that we would at least know about, monitor, and try to get people access to. Fewer and fewer people seem to be able to make it to those in-person.
Yeah.
It's hit and miss. They may emotionally not be able to make it for the day. But they might be more comfortable, and this is what we're hearing, if they could be on either online, a video conference, or just a conference call once a month or so.
Yeah.
Join in if they want. Exit the call. Easier to exit a call than walk out of a meeting because you're overly emotional. So how can they... So we're working on a plan starting this year. So each conference call, we have a professional counselor on. So that counselor is about $125 just to make sure they're not professional grief support groups. But they're there to make sure if something's... They need to help navigate the waters because I'm not a professional grief counselor.
Sure.
But if we're having a group of, 12... different people on the call helping us navigate that. So it can be, or $65 for a crib.
Yeah.
So to get a crib, a new sheet for it, a fresh sheet for the mattress that's in there, and a safe sleep, like a blanket. We've been handing these kinds of things out. Information, and these, they're called wearable blankets or a sleep sack. Did you see any of these?
I have.
This solves your problem. They're great, but they solve your problem with the blankets.
Because
you're worried about a blanket getting over a baby's face. If you zip them in these little... Like it looks like a snuggie, like a baby snuggie.
Mm-hmm.
Then they won't have a blanket go
they don't
over
make those
their
for
face.
Adults, I'm sure.
No, but they make them for up to like 4 years old. I do not think my children would have. By the time they started rolling around and trying to stand up in their crib, these became obsolete for us. But they're a really great way of keeping your baby, dressing your baby in jammies, having them wear a blanket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't worry about anything in the crib. For me, the safest, the cutest thing in a crib is a baby. Mm-hmm. That's all that needs to be in there. Baby laying on his or her back.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, able to breathe. Yeah. And those basic simple things, they're alone on their back in a crib. Mm-hmm. That's our ABCs.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can provide safe sleep information at health fairs for fairly reasonable. So anywhere from $10 to what would be expensive, $125. Yeah. But, you know, but $65 will get somebody a setup. Somebody, particularly low-income people who wouldn't otherwise access a crib, they can get access through our organization and other organizations where we collaborate, which is, I think, the way we're going to tackle this is it's no one organization, mm-hmm. but it's a collaboration of efforts.
Right on.
Awesome. Yeah.
Well, do you have any upcoming events or any programs you want to highlight?
Well, one is this, trying to work on this video conferencing support group. So those uh-huh. will post and we'll try to get people to register, be free to them, to uh-huh. anybody joining in. So that's one thing we're working on. Other events that we have, they're usually hosted by either SIDS families somehow. There's one that will be coming up. We don't have the exact date, but sure. there's a family whose baby had died, and they do an event to honor their baby, Lillianne.
Yeah.
And that should be at the end of, it may be at the end of March, if it's sooner. We post this on our website and our Very Facebook nice. Page. Mm. We've had people do a poker motorcycle run. Mm-hmm. That ends up happening usually in August. Mm-hmm. And we're working on putting together a Mother's Day, Father's Day, sort of a joint family celebration.
Nice.
And you never know who's going to show up, because some days they can't. They're like, I emotionally can't make it.
Yeah.
And some days they can. So lots of more small things that we do throughout the year.
Cool.
So those are the kinds of things that we're working on.
Hey,
sweet.
We apparently have a Twitter account, and I don't do Twitter. I feel really bad. People listening to podcasts are like, it's not hard, but you have to be on it, and I'm just not on it enough. Yeah. But we're hiring a new office assistant who said, I actually know some social media things, and I was there like, oh, good.
You're the person.
I will channel that with you. Let's work on it.
You're our new senior social media.
You know, Facebook's easier for me. I'm older, so I can do Facebook, and I can do the internet, and those kinds of things. We're always looking for people if they want to volunteer, whether it's letter writing or being in the community, teaching safe sleep at high schools. Yeah. Like, high school kids are so funny. I just had a young gal call me, and she said, I want to help out. My brother had died. I never met him, but my brother died of SIDS, and we were so helped by your organization. Now I'm a teenager. I know I can do something.
Nice.
What can I do? So she's going to hopefully have a health fair benefit or table at her school.
Oh, that's awesome.
And raise funds. She'll put out, you know, we'll put out like a little mini baby crib, and people can put money in it or whatever.
Yeah.
Little things like that. Yeah. But at the same time, I wish I could say I'd rather not have the money. Mm-hmm. I just want the information out there.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to close up shop because we don't have babies dying of SIDS.
Yeah.
Or safe, unsafe sleep. I mean, I would hope that all nonprofits have a goal. I
feel that same way.
Let's not have to keep doing this.
Yes.
And let's collaborate, because I've had somebody say, you know, I could start a new nonprofit and then raise money and send it to you. And I said, why do that? Just have your fundraiser and you can just send us the funds.
Yeah,
and we'll manage it. We'll send the letters. We know how to do all the tax receipting.
Yeah.
Don't hurt yourself like that. Collaborate with us.
Yeah.
So we keep trying to figure out ways to do that, reducing the costs, keeping those low. You know, any kind of admin cost low, so that our program work of helping families or being in the community can really make an impact.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, Aileen, thank you so much for coming on and joining us on the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it.
We appreciate it.
So that was our interview with Aileen Carroll. That was a pretty neat interview about really SIDS, but then kind of rolled into like what poverty... like how poverty affects that particular sector. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
As we promised, we're going to hit you with some statistics associated with poverty and childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Heather, what did you find out about, specifically here in Washington State, what we're dealing with?
So I found this kind of cool thing on the internet, and I'll share it with this particular podcast called Spotlight on Poverty and Opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a number of statistics about what poverty looks like in different demographics for Washington State. So as far as the child poverty rate for Washington State, it's at 15%.
Oh.
So if you say...
1 in 10, basically. Yeah. More than 1 in 10.
Yeah, just over 1 in 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's got a little more information about like certain demographics. This says the number of Hispanic children below 200% poverty, not just poverty, but 200% below poverty,
is 202,000 children.
Holy cow.
So ages 1 to 18, 202.
Just here in Washington State?
In Washington State.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
The senior poverty rate is 7.6%. Mm. Women in poverty is 12.2%. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we talk a little bit about the kinship care program with Family and Education right. Support Services, something that they work with. Regards number mm-hmm. of grandparents raising grandchildren. Yeah. In Washington State, this lists it as 83,964. Oh,
wow. That's insane.
That is insane.
That's unbelievable.
Because, yeah, I mean, as somebody who goes into retirement, yeah. you're done raising kids.
You're thinking you don't want to raise kids.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, why would you? You've already done it, and you don't have any other resources to do it anymore.
I want to point out these numbers. So this is what I always find interesting about these percentages. So, and it was a point that was made when Aileen hit on how there's only, how there's 65 or 67 deaths from SIDS mm-hmm. in Washington State per year, and how that seems like a small number, but it's like it's really not.
Yeah.
And I feel like I do want to say when we say sometimes it gets diluted when people say 15%, 7%, 8%, we go, oh well, it's that's de minimis, right? I mean 7%, mm-hmm. I mean whatever. But for the person going through that particular
thing, it's still
thing,
happening. It's their world.
It's, yeah, it's the whole thing, right? It's 100% of your
it's
day.
It's 100%.
Right? And so I think that it's worth noting that sometimes maybe a percentage might be small, mm-hmm. but not everybody within that percentage is just some bum who's trying to take advantage of the system. In fact, it's mostly in the opposite direction of that, as we have found with a lot of folks that we talk to.
Yeah, no matter what kind of political rhetoric exists, mm-hmm. no matter who's in charge of what office or when, like mm-hmm. it is something where, you're always going to have people who take advantage of a system.
Yes.
That's just human nature.
Right, I mean, that's the way it goes.
But the other people who really need the service are the ones who really need the service.
Yeah.
And are really using it for what it is.
Yeah, and I mean, I would venture to say that the majority of the people in those percentages are not people who want to be in those percentages.
Exactly, they'd rather have a life that has a different set of circumstances.
Right.
So yeah, in Washington State, our extreme poverty is listed at 7%.
See, and that's a stunning number.
Yeah.
That's almost 1 in 10 people are in extreme poverty.
And we had talked poverty level is just
$20,000.
Yeah.
When was the last time you personally remember by yourself making $20,000?
I think it was probably my first job.
Right.
You know?
Think about that. There are probably people who are 40, 50 years old
still,
who are struggling to stay above that line, which was our first job.
Yeah.
You know?
It's madness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So along with like poverty, I mean, food insecurity is a form of poverty.
Yes.
And for our state, we're at 14.3%.
Yeah. That's a pretty big number.
Yeah. And unemployment in our state is listed as 5.5%.
Okay.
So our unemployment is lower, which is great, mm-hmm. and that is helpful for people. But still, I mean, that's a lot of people without jobs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially when they need to provide jobs for their life.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah.
So you hit on a really interesting thing that we are about to hear as we toss to the interview with Executive Director Shelley Willis and Kinship Program Director Lynn Irvina. That is the concept of family caregivers taking care of kids even into their retirement. Mm-hmm. So that was a really prevalent issue that we talked about with Shelley and Lynn. And so what we're going to do is we're not gonna wait any longer. We're going to toss this to their interview, and you'll hear a lot of that sort of play out. So here's our interview with Lynn and Shelley. All right, so we are here with what feels like are now co-hosts of the show, Family Education and Support Services. You guys have been on twice now.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
We have never had any recurring guests, so this is a first. We have you guys. So the Executive Director Shelley Willis is here, and then the Kinship Program Director Lynn Irvina of the Family Education Support Services. Thank you guys for coming.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So the topic we are kind of hitting on today is poverty during childhood. Can you guys give us a little bit of history about Family Education and Support Services here in this community?
Certainly. Family Education and Support Services, we call FES, just to make it a bit shorter, is an organization that serves three counties, Thurston, Mason, and Lewis County, and our mission is to inspire healthy child development, by improving resources to the adults who care for children. So that could mean parents, foster parents, kinship caregivers, or community folks, Boys and Girls Club, teachers, early childhood, anyone who influences healthy child development. And we do that through three different approaches. We have intervention-based services where we serve folks who have some kind of trauma or crisis in their life. Maybe there is an addiction or a domestic violence incident or a divorce the family's facing. And then we provide community-based prevention services where we go into schools, tribes, faith community, provide parenting classes and other resources to shore up families. And then the final area of service is our foster and relative care support.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then as far as the kinship care program, can you tell us a little bit about what that does, Lynn?
We have resources for relatives. It's often grandparents, but sometimes it's aunts and uncles or even older siblings mm-hmm. that have taken in children because their biological parents aren't able to care for them. A lot of times they don't know where to turn. They don't know what might be available. And the children come often unexpectedly.
Sure.
As opposed to biological parents who normally have 8 or 9 months that they're aware and are able to plan, often the kinship children show up due to an emergency. Sometimes it's the death of a parent. More often it's substance abuse, mental health mm-hmm. issues. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden grandma and grandpa are parenting again.
Yeah.
And they haven't had time to plan for it in most cases. And so we try to point them in the right direction. If it's not a service we can provide, we try to connect them with another community partner. But we do have support groups, and if they're low income, we have a state-funded grant that we can help them with some basic needs for mm-hmm. the children. Mm-hmm. And I like to think that we can connect them with people that have are a little further down the road in that journey, so they can see that things do calm down.
Like a mentorship kind of?
Yes, and if they join a support group, they can see, oh, some of these people have been raising these kids for a long time, and you know, it's turning out pretty good, both for the kids and for the adults. So I think it gives them hope.
Like mm-hmm. they could do it too?
Yeah, I can do this. Things are gonna work out if I just find the right resources.
Right. Yeah. And we are dealers of hope. Hope dealers, that's what we do.
You should put that on a resume.
I love it. That's awesome.
Business cards, hope dealers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the major things, obviously, that I think we have all noticed over even the last decade since the real economic collapse is that the economy has shifted back to being more positive, having some positive news. However, it has also left behind more people than I think in previous recessions. So it can be a pretty big, wide, sort of invasive issue, the issue of poverty and not having enough. What kinds of effects do you see poverty having on the children that you guys work with directly?
Well, poverty is definitely an influence of children's health and well-being. There are many different factors. Poverty seems to cross all barriers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons why I invited Lynn here, because in Washington State, we've done a study in 2002 that really just assessed what is the state of relative caregivers in our state. Mm-hmm. And we found that over 60% of relative caregivers were below the poverty line.
Wow.
So they are over 60, raising a child under 5, and
unbelievable,
below the poverty guideline. And that means under $20,000 a year. They're living under $20,000 a year.
Which I've always found is a stunning number, by the way.
That
number feels like
line.
It's never moved, even though everything else, all the prices have gone up in the world.
Yeah.
One of the challenges that I see a lot is housing.
Yeah.
And that's across the board for any population. But if you think about an older person who maybe has living arrangements that are fine for one person, and all mm-hmm. of a sudden three grandchildren are added to the mix, they probably have to move.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to find something for the same monthly expense. And the support that the state can provide is very minimal. A few hundred dollars for bringing in three more children
doesn't cover
the cost. And so we see more people sharing housing arrangements. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's safe for the children, sometimes not always so safe.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so that's a real concern, is even when they understand maybe I need to move because we don't want all three kids in one little living space, it's hard to find an option that works for them.
Right.
Especially if you've come to a point in your life where you think, I'm retiring,
right.
I'm a retired person, this is where I'm going to live the rest of my life, or until mm-hmm. I decide I need a new place that's smaller. Or
it's even smaller, not bigger.
Yeah, not bigger, yeah.
Right.
Nobody plans to spend their retirement raising children.
Exactly.
Right. And in foster care placements, they have an opportunity to be trained beforehand, to choose a room, get it decorated, plan for all the mm-hmm. supplies the child's going to need. Whereas in kinship care, you're just given a call that says this kid's going to go into foster care if you can't show up. It's part of your family, of course you're going to show up.
Yeah.
And then you have to figure out things like child care and health care and mm-hmm. beds, and that's what Lynn does, is help families kind of navigate through that system.
Yeah. So as far as Thurston County goes, can you guys give any insight into poverty that you've seen for this county for children?
One of the things I've noticed is that poverty is close to all of us in some ways,
mm-hmm.
and it's not because of one incident. It's usually a series of crises that happen to families all at once, and it's hard to come back from. Maybe there was a domestic violence and a family fled the scene, and maybe there was an addiction and the parent was self-medicating the trauma of whatever had occurred, and now there's a DUI, and there can be the snowball effect, and it's really just hard to get out of.
Yeah.
Poverty is an isolating event,
mm-hmm.
and most of the people we're working with don't have peers that are living in poverty, so you're entering into an unknown scene, and you don't quite know how to navigate it. If you lose your housing, where do you go?
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot to choose from.
Yeah.
And maybe you can't call on your family for a variety of reasons as well. So it's been isolating for folks. And we've seen there's a lack of respect and dignity that goes with poverty.
Yeah.
And we are constantly working within our community with our partners to help raise that bar a little bit.
Yeah.
We have some really great unintentional partners that are serving poverty families mm-hmm. impacted by poverty. Places like the library, the only warm place for families to go, and they can hang out and visit with each other and be warm. The library's been very gracious and
nice.
Families.
Yeah.
Some great community collaborations trying to address this issue.
Yeah.
I think that one of the issues that I've seen, particularly for the older caregivers that I work with, is medical expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, they have one major medical emergency, and it drains whatever savings they had.
Right.
Yeah. And sometimes if there's grandma and grandpa raising a child and one of them passes away, then the income is slashed.
Sure.
And the ability to bring in more income also decreases. Because sometimes the retired folks do end up going back to work, maybe part-time, just to put a little more resources for the family. But the medical issues can be a really big concern. And mm-hmm. most people realize they're going to have to deal with that maybe as they age, but to add the layer of raising another generation of children and taking care of their needs while trying to meet your own needs. I do know relative caregivers who have not purchased their own prescription medications because they needed to buy food or a pair of shoes for a teenager that was now living mm-hmm. with them. And so trying to balance their limited resources becomes much more challenging when they take in these children, but they want to do it.
Yeah.
I want to be sure that we get that in there. They're,
they're
taking them in because they want them to be with family. They want them to feel safe, but it's a struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Go ahead.
We had one grandma just that Lynn serves who was taking her child to school so the child could maintain the same school, same friends, less trauma. And what she didn't have was funding for transportation. So she would take the child to school, sit in the parking lot during the day while the kid was in school, and then return the child home because she couldn't afford the gas to go back and forth.
Wow.
So what she didn't know is that schools have a very strong resource to help families in poverty too. And there's something called McKinney-Vento that would have helped this child transport. Mm. Lynn was able to help them connect. And the school is a very strong supporter of families, providing early morning meals and helping families navigate showers or clothing or mm-hmm. weekend food, whatever they need to survive.
Nice.
So that is, you bring up a good point. And I feel like maybe it's a trend that we have seen over the last like 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the role of a school in the development or in the development of a child's personal life. It seems to me, I could just be colored by the fact that I was a kid and I didn't notice it, right? But it seems to me, as we've gotten like further down the road here, I used to know a few kids who would have free or reduced lunch, right? And then all of a sudden, now you have schools that might be in the 90 percentile of kids having free and reduced lunch. Then you include some of them get breakfast. Then they've introduced these other services. Have you noticed that there's a burden now placed on the public school system to essentially fill in gaps that maybe they've never had to do before?
Absolutely. And in fact, in the area, and I'm the kinship navigator for Thurston, Lewis, and Mason County. Within that area, there are schools that they've just decided to go 100% to free lunch because it was easier than keeping track of the few that didn't qualify. So the entire school receives their meals free. And if you think about it, our children do spend, in many cases, more time at school than at home.
Yeah,
waking time.
And so it's become a de facto social services agency.
Yeah.
And so we try to partner with as many schools as we can so they know about what we have to offer. And sometimes I've even gone to the school to meet with relatives raising children because that's a safe place for them. It's somewhere they're already comfortable, mm-hmm. rather than asking them to come to my office where they're not familiar. I'll meet them on their terms where they're familiar. And that way the counselor maybe can sit in and find out more about our services too. But you're right, the schools are not only feeding the children. We have a local school in Lacey that across the street, kids can get their clothes washed.
Yeah.
And like she said, they can shower. Uh-huh. Things can be provided because for whatever reason, the people they're caring for them are struggling to provide those things.
Right.
I am often inspired by the generosity of our community. Schools stepping up, libraries stepping up, private businesses stepping up. During this last winter, we had a healthcare agent Vernon Bonfield donated to a family in need, great need, and they not only gave them food and clothing to get mm-hmm. through the holidays, but also a tent because they were homeless and mm-hmm. set them up to make sure they had heat and water and everything they needed to survive.
Very nice.
Yeah. We have some really great, caring, compassionate folks in our community.
Yeah.
So as far as the kinship care program, do you think that where we are now is like a flat, we're going to stay on this, or do you think that the need is just growing?
It's growing.
Yeah.
And we hear a lot in the news about the opioid epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
What we don't hear enough about is the children that are impacted by it.
Yeah.
We hear about plans for more prevention or treatment, but we don't hear enough about the safety net for the families, the children that are left behind when mom and dad either OD or are involved in the legal system because of their activities, or their health is just mm-hmm. so
they get lost.
They can't parent. Right. So the kids are often left behind, and it's not going away. I would be thrilled if there was no need for my job, although I love what I do, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But I don't think it's going to stay the same. If we make it through this current crisis, I have a feeling there'll be something else that will pick up. You know, it was meth a little bit more in the past, other drugs, or even alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And so, unfortunately, there's always going to be
something
that impacts parents that are trying to do the best they can. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so the need for supports, I just don't see it going away.
Yeah.
It would be great if it did.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, people seem to get outraged when they see those photos of like a parent or parents with their children, if they're OD'd and there's children there. But what happens afterward doesn't seem to get any topical, any information.
Yeah.
That part fades into the background.
It sure does.
And we don't hear enough about the people that do step up, be it mm-hmm. foster parents who are doing a really great job, or if it's relatives of some type or another. And I talked to one really young caregiver. It was a older brother.
Uh-huh.
He was only 21, and he was married, just gotten married, and he and his wife were raising his three younger brothers.
Oh, wow.
And I said, why are you doing this? There's a lot of people your age that would probably not want to do this. He said, my mom is a drug addict, and I don't want my brothers to be.
Yeah, wow.
Plain and simple. That's bottom line. Yeah. He's going to do it.
Right.
And he did it with very little support from anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, but good people, and you don't hear those stories very often.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So let's say somebody hears the podcast and wants to start giving to you guys as an organization. What do those donations do for you guys that come through the Combined Fund Drive?
Well, I want to talk about that, but I also want to share the philosophy of working with folks in poverty and
sure.
how we need to kind of work on the golden rule a little bit and be nice to people as we would want them to be kind
sure,
to us.
Yeah.
And living in poverty, as I mentioned before, is a sort of disrespectful place to be. And there's a really great mentor named Ruby Payne who talks about poverty and understanding different levels of income and how we respond to it as a community. And she talks about those who are living in low poverty after a meal. Meal references make sense to me. So she says, after a meal, if you're low income, your question to the family is, did you get enough? Because it's about quantity and making sure you get your needs met. Or a middle income family would look at a meal and say, was it good? Because now we're talking about quality and we have the time to afford quality. Mm-hmm. And a higher income family would say, did you like the presentation? Did it follow the aesthetic? Because it's not about quantity or quality. Then it's just about blending in with the theme, right? So very vague analogy, but it helps us in a great deal understand why if we have $100 and we give it to a family, what's going to make the biggest impact? Mm-hmm. Is it paying the power bill? Is it getting their needs met right away, which is usually what they need? We need food today, right now. Mm-hmm. We're not thinking about gas next week. It's about today, living in crisis.
Yeah.
So if people were to donate to us, we're looking for tangible items like diapers and gas cards, clothing, coats, boots, mm-hmm. shoes, emergency items that we can use today.
Yeah.
And then we're also helping families by providing things like fiscal literacy classes. If you're taking on the care of a grandchild and you've leaned a little heavy on your credit cards because you had no other revenue,
sure.
how do you get out of that debt before
right.
spiraling back down again? So financial literacy classes. There's training to help caregivers maintain their health and well-being because kids deserve to have parents who've had their needs met, mm-hmm. caregivers who've had their needs met. So
powerful tools.
Thank you. Powerful
for caregivers.
Tools mm-hmm. is a great curriculum that helps caregivers focus on their own health and well-being so they can be there in the long term for their kids. And then fatherhood classes, uh-huh. Helping folks who are moving out of jail try to reintegrate into their families in a healthy, positive way. Uh-huh. So if someone was giving to us, helping us put on those services for those in need in the community would be a great service.
Nice.
Spectacular.
Something as simple as a support group still does cost some money because mm-hmm. the children need to be tended during that time and they need to be in a safe place, so we have some expenses as far as the facility and who's going to watch the children while the relatives are in their group. So while it's not a huge expense, it's an ongoing expense
sure.
because we offer in Thurston County we offer two support groups, one during the day and one during the evening, and there's usually six a month between those two, so
yep.
there's some expenses involved with that.
Yeah.
But I think we do a really good job making the money spread just as far as it can.
Mm-hmm.
And some of our services, she mentioned the diapers and some of the clothing. We have a clothing closet. Those are available for anybody in the community that's in need. You don't have to come in and fill out a questionnaire, answer a bunch of, you know, people wanting to know about your situation.
Sure.
If you walk in the door and you have a need and we've got something that'll work, we're trying to fill that need for you.
That's great.
That is awesome.
And did you guys have any upcoming programs or upcoming events or programs or anything else you wanted to highlight?
What a great invite. Thank you. On April 14th, we'll be hosting our annual Seeds of Hope Gala Auction, and that's our way to inform the community about the great work that we do, and some folks that we've served will tell how they were able to benefit from our services. But mostly we're there to inspire the community and talk about hope and how we can all give to create a healthier community.
Very nice.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, before we leave, we are actually recording this on Valentine's Day, and Shelley brought in a couple of quotes from some actual kids that you guys have served, correct?
That's true.
About what they love?
Yes.
Okay.
We work with kids, and I asked them last week, what does love mean to you? If you were telling somebody what love is, how
mm-hmm.
would you define it? So I have a couple of quotes from kids. I thought maybe each of us could read.
I love
oh,
it.
Very nice.
I love it.
So Carrie, age 5, says, love is when a girl puts on perfume and a boy puts on shaving cologne and they go out and they smell each other.
And 6-year-old Chrissy says, love is when you go out to eat and give somebody most of your French fries without making them give you any of theirs.
Oh,
nice.
That is
nice.
Deep. And that is love. Tommy, age 6, says that love is like a little old woman and a little old man who are still friends even after they know each other so well.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is Chris, age 7. Love is when my mommy sees daddy smelly and sweaty and still says he's handsomer than Robert Redford.
Thank you.
Yes,
those
that's
are
great.
Fantastic. I love that that kid knows who Robert Redford is.
Yeah. Mommy must really love Robert Redford.
Mommy must like
mommy
him.
Must really like mm-hmm. Robert Redford.
Thank you.
So anyway, I want to thank you guys for coming and talking about yet another one of the services that you guys provide. And just kind of talking a little bit about what I think has become a tougher issue that people are trying to wrap their arms around. So thank you, Shelley, and thank you, Lynn, for coming on the podcast.
Thanks
thank
so
you
much for inviting me.
Awesome. And that was the last of our two interviews with Lynn Urvina and Shelley Willis, both pretty cool, engaging people. That's the third time Family Education and Support Services has
yes,
been
it
on
is.
Our podcast.
Yeah.
They are a recurring guest all of a sudden. So for you, Heather, what was one of the things that you got most from either one of these two interviews?
So, like, I completely understand how poverty is something. It doesn't. It's an issue of wealth, of
yeah.
course, but it goes intersectional. So,
yeah.
like, you've got people who are all across the board. It doesn't matter what age they are. It
yeah.
doesn't matter where they come from. It doesn't matter their religion or the color of their skin. Nothing of that. Like,
mm-hmm.
poverty affects everybody. So, something that is astounding to me is just that how many people who don't have supplies for their kids, right? Like,
yeah.
cribs.
Right.
When,
that was crazy.
When Aileen was talking about that,
right.
like, yeah, if you don't have a crib
that's
for your
crazy
kid or
yeah.
some place to keep them that's safe.
Yeah.
then you might have something terrible happen because
right.
you don't have access.
Right. That was crazy to me.
Yeah.
Well, and that was, I found, the first interview I found really interesting with Aileen because when we first, when I first thought about interviewing SIDS Foundation of Washington
mm-hmm.
about poverty.
You didn't see it.
I didn't see the connection. And then after talking with her, I was like, well, of course there's a connection.
Mm-hmm.
It would be stupid not to think that there's a connection. Because
yeah.
of course, I remember, like, our first one especially,
mm-hmm.
right? When our oldest was born,
yeah.
I don't know how my wife reacted to it.
Sure.
She seemed as cool as the other side of the pillow about it, but I was, like, all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, I got hit with all this literature. I had to watch some video before I left. I was like, if I don't kill this kid on my way out to the parking lot by accident, it will be a miracle.
Nice.
Right?
You were super panicked about
yeah,
this.
I was. And full disclosure, I know we mentioned it in the podcast, I totally buckled him in wrong.
Mm.
I took his feet and I put him out to the outside. It
yeah.
was a disaster. Later
but
on...
But he made it home.
He did make it home. But so I think of like somebody like me who actually has resources like
yeah.
that, right? And I still
And you
felt
were overwhelmed
intimidated,
and intimidated.
Right? Imagine somebody who leaves that hospital with no resources whatsoever.
Yeah, because, I mean, somebody who doesn't have the money to, say, maybe afford a car seat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you get your child home safely? You
right.
have to try to make
right.
it, you know,
right.
fake it till you make it kind
of
thing. And,
I
yeah,
know.
That's not legal by any means.
You can't lean on people who have had that experience before because
yeah.
your parents aren't around or whatever. You like for some cases, I imagine that like you're a single mom, so you don't even have the husband to be able to help you.
Uh-huh.
All sorts of issues that like after talking with her, I was like, well, yeah, that all makes sense.
Yep.
It totally correlates.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
For sure. The other thing I always find interesting, just as a side note,
mm-hmm.
is how I love it how every single charity says, I wish I didn't have my job.
Yeah, and they both said it.
And I always think that's really interesting because their goal is to essentially be unemployed. Right?
It is kind of a funny goal if you look at it that way. But yeah, if you don't have to provide the service that your organization provides, that means things are going really well.
Yeah, and it's a very... I always love when people say that. I hope that we can get there. It's a very noble goal.
Yeah.
I fear that might not sometimes, but it's a
yeah.
very noble goal, and I always appreciate when people say it.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
It's pretty cool. So we still got some recognition events that we're doing. Thurston County Recognition Event is on March 2nd from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Little Creek Casino. It will be it'll have about 250 folks there. It'll be really big. We'll give out a bunch of different awards.
Yeah, and the menu for that
is
out is of
insane.
Sight. Yeah.
We have like a beef carving station and like a chicken souvlaki. It's insane.
Yeah.
Like street tacos.
And there's like a pasta station.
There's
involved.
A pasta station.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free, there's all sorts of cool stuff there.
Yeah.
I mean,
very
we take
nice.
Care of everybody in this one.
That's what we do.
That's what we do. We take care of all people.
Write that down.
Write that down. That's our new mission. And then on March 15th, we have the Snohomish King or Snow King recognition event happening at the Shoreline, an old Shoreline High School or Shoreline School that you're building or something.
I think they call it the Shoreline Community Center now.
Shoreline Community Center. We'll go with that.
Yeah.
Handing out more awards, thanking everybody in the Snohomish King area. And we're still TBD. With Whatcom County, stay tuned, everybody in Bellingham. We are definitely coming to you. We just have to figure out venues and dates and things like that. So, so those are some of our upcoming recognition events. And basically, look for, we're going to start now having some content for 2008 being developed. And so that was.
For what year?
2008. Did I say 2008?
You did.
Holy cow. 2008.
Wow.
Yeah, watch out for this up-and-comer. His name's Barack Obama. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
There's this new thing out there called Twitter.
Yeah.
I don't quite understand it.
Wow, 2008.
What does everybody need to know what I'm eating?
What the hell?
I think you might need a little more coffee, pal.
Holy cow. All right, 2018.
Hey!
We'll have content developed for 2018. So
we're going to start videos soon?
Videos. We're going to start. We'll have some poster stuff leak out. We have, you know, the theme will start to be out there a little bit.
Yeah,
have some conversations about leadership breakfast.
Yeah, it's right around the corner.
Right around the corner.
Yeah.
So watch for some of that stuff. Anyway, thank you guys for joining us on this particular podcast. Super interesting, really fun guests to talk about a really serious issue. So stay tuned. We'll have more to come.
Bye.